Welcome to the Hot Dog Podcast. Kevin A.C. Potter's beat writer for the San Diego Union Tribune. I am in Los Angeles. There's Ryan Findley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I have no idea where Ryan is, but he's not in Los Angeles. But you'll be paying close attention, as you always do. I appreciate that whenever I know my boss is watching. I get text during the game, and I know that you're watching. You know what's going on. We have kind of a lot to talk about and really only one thing to talk about, thanks to Bob Melvin. Padres, Dodgers, first of three games. That would be big enough on its own. You know Bob Melvin felt it was time to say something. Because managers like to pick their spots, Ryan. And he picked his spot right before a series against the Dodgers where you're going to face Dustin May, Julio Urias, and Tony Gonsolin. So, you know, you'd like to do it like when you've got three games coming up against the Reds, right? And you're going to go on a winning streak. Well, you must have been really ticked off if you were going to do it. And he was. He was ticked off. What stood out to you about the things you heard and read about Bob Melvin?
Two things. Number one, last year's team, which I thought was just as frustrating as what we've seen through the first half of this year. My understanding is Bob Melvin waited till like September?
September 15th.
September 15th in Phoenix, right? To give them the time to turn it around talk. To do it in May, to me, means that there's something there that's beyond just the struggles that teams typically have. Number one. I guess let's explore that first point. Kevin, you mentioned in your newsletter today that, you know, there's some belief maybe within and inside and outside the team that maybe the preparation hasn't been what it should, that maybe there are some people who just expect to win every day because of who's on the team. Speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I think the way that I put it, and I want to make this clear, like, you can never speak in generalities about a team, right? Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of different guys, different individuals, different mindsets. That's the first thing I want people to remember. And I don't want anybody to think they're not trying or they thought they could just show up. I think that's the way I put it, was that it's not that they felt they could just show up. It's that they feel they're so good that they were eventually going to show up. Right. Like we don't just have to put our uniforms out there, but like we're good and well, our guys will start hitting pretty soon. Right. And you know, the evolution of Xander Bogaerts is a little interesting. When I talked to him in Chicago, so we're talking about what, 2 weeks ago, maybe three, and it was, you know, Soto wasn't hitting, Manny wasn't hitting, and he felt, here's a guy who's got two rings, by the way. And was a key part of that 2018 team with the Red Sox, that there was just no way to look at this other than when those guys start hitting, we'll be good. Just no, I believe him that he felt there was just no possible way to look at it other than that. Mm-hmm. And now yesterday, now, of course, they've talked with Bob Melvin, or he's talked with them. Mm-hmm. And now his take is, we can't keep saying that. That's what I really think the issue is we're going to be okay. We can't just keep saying we're going to be okay. Whatever little thing it is, and maybe for each individual, that's different. For whatever thing it is or things it is, we have to do things different and we got to go now. I have a lot more to say on that, but I want to know where you want to go with it.
Well, to me, it's interesting. Bob Melvin and Kevin, you've covered a handful of managers in the last 5 years with the Padres. Bob Melvin is one of the most even-keeled men in baseball. This is not somebody who's going to tear apart a clubhouse or throw stuff or kick and scream. And that's one of the reasons I think why he's so universally respected. Did it surprise you to see him so, number one, pissed after Thursday's game? Two, to hear that he had spoken to the team about sort of where they stand. Did it surprise you that it happened so early?
A little bit, but not really. Okay, so first of all, been waiting for it, been kind of watching for it, been hinting around about it, you know, asking and stuff. And that's always the delicate line with the beat writer, right? And you know who the manager is, and you also know that this is a good team. You know how the manager feels about that. I will say this: the second I walked into there, I said, I think it's coming. And then the second he went to answer the first question, I said, I know it's coming.
Right.
And then you know that Bob Melvin doesn't say those things to the media, thus the public, without having said it to the team. That's just not how he operates. Bob Melvin says things to the teams all the time. It's often in a hitter's meeting, right? Before games. And it's not like this rah, rah, or hey, this, you know, it's just the natural flow of the daily hitters meeting. But here's the difference. Like last year's team at this time, and I didn't look exactly where they were at 38 games, but it was like 10 games over 500.
Right.
They may have been just as far back from the Dodgers or further, because the Dodgers were already like on their historic pace, but they were playing, they weren't hitting very well, but they were winning. They were winning close games like they're not now. They were winning extra inning games like they're not now. Right. But so there wasn't a need. And then throughout the summer, there was a little bit of the same thing. Oh, we'll be okay. But then it reached a point, September 15th, they were five games under 500 over the previous 3 months. And much like yesterday, it was like, this is a team. They were in Arizona. This is a team we should beat. And make no mistake, the Padres felt they should have swept that series. Definitely taken 2 of 3. This is a team we should beat. These are pitchers we should be hitting. This is unacceptable. And the higher expectations, Xander Bogaerts is on this team. Juan Soto's hitting. Yesterday was probably, you could argue, collectively, Tatis, Soto, Machado together, one of their most productive days. It's the only the second time outside of Mexico City that you've gotten an extra base hit from all three of them. It's only the second time in 18 games since Tatis has been back. Now, those have all come in, I think, the past 4 or 5 games. So things are heating up, and still we're losing to the Twins. It's not just the Twins. Okay. That's a first place team in the Central, in the American League, but it's a preponderance of things. And then still we're losing to the Twins. Again, I've said it and we'll continue to say it. The top of this order hits, they'll be fine. But the bottom of the order isn't doing squat.
Right. And they're allowed to score more than 3 runs in a game every once in a while. You know, I mean,
they're pretty good.
Yeah. And that's in a, you know, we could speak to some of the bullpen issues that have bubbled up the last couple of days. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a really, the path to victory is a very slim, you know, eye of a needle thing when your offense isn't producing, right? Yes. If it means if you're not scoring more than 3-4 runs a game, it means you need to obviously shut down the other guy. And that's just not, that's not realistic.
Every day.
It's not realistic every day.
Yeah. Every day for Brent Honeywell to have to come in a one-run game or whatever. Every day for Steven Wilson to have to – they don't have Robert Suarez. You're asking guys, the same guys who maybe weren't supposed to be there to do that job every day. And Bob Melvin, he was exasperated. It was like, we keep putting this pressure on our bullpen. And then he went on to talk about the offense. Yeah. Right.
Well, and that's exactly it. And again, there are only so many bullets – Brett Honeywell has, right? Now is not the time of year to be putting your bullpen through this stuff because you're going to need them in August, September, October.
They were capitalizing last year on, for the most part, early, especially on quality starts. And they're not just eking by quality starts here where like their starter's giving up 3, maybe like 5 runs, 3 unearned. So it's still a quality start.
Right.
We're talking about 6 shutouts, 6-1, 6-2 runs, like 6 innings, 2 runs. We're talking about really well-pitched games for 2023, right? I know Sandy Koufax and a lot of the, you know, the old-timers, right? Like scoff at that. But 6-2, that's a really good well-pitched game. And this offense, you're thinking, "Oh, yeah, most of the time this offense is up 5-2, 6-2 at that point." Guess what? The Padres have 16 quality starts, they're 8-8.
That's insane.
That's really insane. That's a great word. It's like, so
whoa.
Yeah. So that gets you. I haven't looked. I remember last year when they started, when they were in that rough spot patch and they started to squander some of those from their starting pitching. But early on, they were really good in those. But I mean, teams are generally, you've at least got a 660. You know, you're at least winning 2/3 of those games.
Sure.
That's the average team, not the team with the fearsome foursome. Remember, like the Big Four, you know.
Big Four. Yep. Well, and here's the thing too. Yeah, okay, so we've talked at length about the Big Four. There's an entire other half of this lineup that you cannot at this point expect anything from.
Yeah, I mean,
Austin Nola is not hitting.
Good bunter.
Actually, yes. But Austin Nola is being asked to bunt. Okay. Ha Sung Kim, I think, continues to struggle hitting the hard stuff.
Yeah.
Your designated hitter is, I think, very up and down. We talked 2 weeks ago about what a good DH that is. If you sort of mash Cruz and Carpenter together, it doesn't seem like they've gotten much production from either guy since. I mean, there's a whole half of this team that I don't think scares anybody. What has to change there? Is it just putting together more at bats? Is it personnel? Is there somebody who could be called up to try to spark this thing? What's the deal?
No, they don't have anything down there. I know that. I'm getting the emails that Bob Melvin needs to be fired. I'm getting emails that they, you know, need to not play this guy and this guy. And I understand that. Look, the media gets to do that. I try not to, but I mean, you know, media gets to do that. The fans get to do that. We get to offer what's wrong and not the solution. Right. This is the team they put together. I mean, okay. Could it help? Sometimes if like guys were hitting better at the top and then there's more pressure on the bottom, like nobody's doing very well. Like, right. Like Fernando Tatis Jr. is making things happen, but also he's come up with guys in scoring position when those times that maybe Trent Grisham has gotten on. Right. And Fernando hasn't done anything with it. Right?
Right.
When Fernando's got on, Manny hasn't done anything with it. The number five spot, whether it's been Carpenter, Cruz, Bogart, has done virtually zilch. Could stringing at bats together, getting more than one guy on an inning or more than two guys on, or, you know, a big hit when you've got two guys on, you know, then is the pitcher under stress? That's what you thought this lineup was going to do, was pitcher under duress. The other thing is, like, you know, you've moved Soto down now and you move Cronenworth up. Like, you're not going to find a bigger Cronenworth fan. Is he a number two hitter? Well,
maybe, you know, not on a team with Juan Soto.
Yeah,
or maybe not on a team with Manny Machado.
How about, like, you know, the big four does what it's supposed to do so that you can stop moving guys around. And then you got Cronenworth where he should be, which is five or six. And that's a heck of a five or six hitter when he's doing what, you know, when he's going well, right? Sure. He can be prone to some ups and downs for sure. But okay, that's a five or six hitter. I mean, or six or seven hitter, whatever. So really, it really is. I understand. I keep saying, and I will keep saying, that big four should win you a lot of games. All right. Mm-hmm. It, no matter what the bottom is doing, but the bottom has been really bad.
Right. Right. Any way to explain Ha-Sung Kim's struggles?
Well, he's got a long swing. And you know, he's gotten better. When he's not swinging and missing at pitches he shouldn't, and when he doesn't chase, it seems, and look, I ask, why do they even throw him anything? Why do they throw him any spin? Well, you got to mix it up. He's a professional hitter. He has hit, you know, fastballs. It appears that now after 3 years, he's not going to, you know, he's not going to do that. He's not going to consistently do that. So he has to be up there and give you a really good at bat and get the right pitch to hit and not miss it. Because if he's at 1-2 and this guy's got a, you know, good fastball and maybe Ha-Sung's fouled off some good pitches, I mean, eventually, more times than not, he's evidently, again, not a coach, not a scout, all these fixes he's made, he can't consistently catch up to major league fastballs.
Okay. And it's so funny, on the flip side, you've got Nelson Cruz.
I also want to say this about Ha-Sung. First off, what is your lineup construction? Because I understand that there's a lot of talk, and I'm not saying it's invalid. I've been trying to think it through and ask people about it. Like, first off, his value defensively is very high. Okay. And what is your lineup construction if Ha-Sung's out of there? Is Matt Carpenter at first and Carpenter or and Cronenworth at second? Is that really what you want? Is Odor playing more? Is that really what you want? I'm, you know, again, $7 million a year for Ha-Sung Kim. And this is the team that you've built. I don't know what the solution is.
Right. I think $7 million for a guy who's a Gold Glove caliber infielder is a bargain, kind of regardless of whether he hits. But that's
it can be. Again, a lot of things are working against him, and that includes that no one around him is hitting.
Right. Well, it's the Austin Nola thing, right? Which is, it's okay to have a catcher who's not hitting if everybody else in the lineup is doing what he's supposed to do.
Right. And if he's maybe hitting like 40 points better.
Right. I mean, if it's Austin Hedges, right. If it's Austin Hedges hitting 210 with 13 home runs, right. That's totally fine. If you've got everybody else hitting.
Yeah, which, you know, I've always said, I've said that a lot about these Padres catchers, trying to say like there's only so many like really good hitting catchers. I mean, there really are.
There's like two. There's two.
Why do the Padres have to have like the worst all the time? I don't know. I guess that's why they went and got Ethan Salas, and he and Camposano could be the catchers. I don't know. Sooner than later.
You haven't gotten any call up Ethan Salas emails yet, have you, Kevin?
No, because there's still Camposano to talk about.
It's for you. I know that we've said for the last couple of weeks, hey, it's a long season. Hey, it's a small sample size. At what point? I mean, we're almost at the quarter way point here of the season. What point do you go, oh, this team may not be what we thought. Are you there yet?
Well, sure. I have to ask myself those questions all the time, right? Like I was asking him in spring training, if they're, you know, I'm constantly second guessing myself. If you remember, there was a story on the budget that I just didn't get to. That was what happens if this all goes wrong, right? And I just didn't get to that in terms of, you know, also didn't have it as a real high priority. And I'm not saying I do now, right? But I have to ask myself that question all the time. I started asking it a month ago. But I still, they are 19-19. They hold the final National League wildcard spot. As I said again in the newsletter today, this is not panicking. This is trying to get ahead of the panic. This is so that they don't have to panic in June. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that would be my answer. If they're under 500, if a whole bunch of other teams have taken off and they're seven games out of the wild card, heck, if they're five games out of the wild card, you know, they're not what we thought they were. But in terms of panic, in terms of not making the playoffs, so let's try to keep this in perspective, right? Mm-hmm. It's how you're playing in September.
Sure.
But this was a team that had a goal to play the whole season the same, right? Right?
Yeah.
And if they're going to play the whole season the same, well, that's not going to be very good. So they meant to play it well. To no matter who it was, to do what they did to the Giants, to the Reds, right? Take two out of three, sweep a two-game series, go to Minnesota, take two out of three. Remember, before this, they've lost four out of five. The final two to the Dodgers, then went and won in Minnesota, and then lost. Before that, it was it 11-6 or was it 10-6? Well, I think it might have been 11-6 over the previous or 10-6 over their previous whatever 16 or 17. So right. Like you know. Things were going okay.
Right. It was, I think it was three out of four and five out of seven or something like that too. Heading into that series, right? Because they took two from the Giants.
When you go back to Tatis coming, they won the game before Tatis came back against Atlanta, took three of four against Arizona, then dropped two of three in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm chewing ice. If you're watching, you see that. It's just kind of natural. If you're listening later on the podcast, you're like, what the hell's the matter with this guy? I just go about my business and then, you know, whatever. And then they swept the Giants, and then won two out of three against the Reds, and then won the first one against the Dodgers. And it's like, oh, okay,
here they are. Yep.
So, but these last four out of five, and you know what? There's a clear path to victory in all of them. Look, you can argue that a lot about baseball. That's why you don't bet baseball unless you're an idiot or you're doing like prop bets, right? Or you've got a lot of money and you're just having fun. Because there it is, as you talked about, it's just such a slim margin game. It's the reason they play 162. These are humans out there. You know, as much as a lot of people, including, you know, the analytics people, have broken this down into numbers and everything, it's a game played by humans and there's such a slim margin. But in every one of these games that they've lost, the two against the Dodgers, two against the Twins, there was this obvious path to victory. And hold on, right here in my book, over the past eight games, they are 8-67 with runners in scoring position. That's less than 200. I think it might be closer to 100 than 200. And so there are, and by the way, they're last in the major leagues for the season with a 203 batting average with runners in scoring position. I think they're fourth from the bottom with a 222 average with anybody on base. But over these this past run here of the past week or so, it's been as bad as ever. Mm-hmm. And it was like you were getting them on for the most part and then just doing absolutely nothing once you got a guy on. And right now you're not slugging enough to make up for that.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. All that said, three games against the Dodgers in LA, if you take two or three or sweep. And look at me saying that on a podcast. I mean, if they could take two or three, if they could win the series, I think that there would be some thought that things will eventually turn and that things would start looking good. This is a team that with the until what about 6:35 p.m. on Sunday looked like they were going to take two or three from the Dodgers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Kevin, and again, I'm new at this. Do games at Dodger Stadium matter more to these guys than games at Oracle Park or at Chase Field? Or is it just too early and is it just so long a season that it doesn't?
Again, to some guys it does, and I think today will to a certain extent. I think this weekend will. Yes, they are humans. Some of them acknowledge that more than others. some of them acknowledge that they look at things like the standings or stories or hear what is said more than others. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and they are playing the Dodgers, and mm-hmm. you know they as much as like winning that series was big there, obviously, in the playoffs, and that's the one that matters. It was one series.
Right.
The Dodgers owned them, and that's just fact.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. Just to say, good pitching coming up, though. I'll tell you what, Michael Wacha has really figured out how to work his stuff. He's the Sunday starter. You got Snell versus May. Man, what was May 6th shutout? Last weekend.
Yeah, he was.
And tomorrow, look, you got the games going 3 hour. You got these are tough on a beat writer. I'm telling you, especially one who just flew back from the Central Time Zone. You got 7:10 tonight, 4:40 tomorrow, 1:10. So it's like 3 hours earlier, 3 hours earlier. It's tough on the players too, but they're not important. So you got May Snell tonight, great matchup. Urias Musgrove tomorrow afternoon, great matchup. And I think Wacha Gonsolin as a number three matchup, pretty darn good. These are incredible matchups for a series that doesn't have Darvish Kershaw going.
Right. I mean, the two biggest names out there pitching wise aren't throwing. Snell, we talk about Snell, it seems like all the time. But, you know, matched up against May, I mean, these are two sides of the same coin, I think. Guys who both have big swing and miss, guys who have great stuff. When they're finding the strike zone regularly, they're fantastic. Have you seen any signs one way or another on Snell, his last couple starts, to indicate what might happen here tonight?
Fastball command, and it's saving him. And also the changeup is incredibly improved. Mm-hmm. And that's great because the slider, his best pitch, is not working.
Right.
Incrementally getting better. He says it looked better last game. And you know, there's things for all the things that people rip on Blake Snell for saying, there's a pattern. He's honest. Mm-hmm. And when he says something's starting to come, he's not saying it's good. And he's not saying it didn't just get hit 420 feet. He's mm-hmm. saying it's starting to come. He feels like the slider's starting to come. Looked like it last game. If it comes, you know, and he pitches with the same, with the mm-hmm. fastball command that he has, the Dodgers don't hit him very well, so that's great. May was fantastic last start, and I think he hadn't been great, and he got better against the Padres. But he's a fantastic pitcher, especially when he's hitting the corners. And I'll tell you, that's one of the things that frustrates them is, you know, if you're going to get shut down by Dustin May, it happens. Mm-hmm. You're going to get shut down by Bailey Ober. And some of the other guys that have done well against them, it makes getting shut down by Dustin May a little less palatable, right? Sure. It's like, you know, big task tonight, right? Big task. They said they got to start playing, you know, a little more urgency, a little more. And I'll write about this coming up. They, in games, like the amount of times they've scored in the first inning or the second inning or the third inning, and then not the rest of the game.
Or a lot.
One run in an inning and had a chance to make it a 3 or 4 run inning and didn't. Mm-hmm. That's one of the issues that Bob Melvin's talking about, that they're talking about, is like, it's there. And then they're just not, it's that, the word he used, and it sort of surprised me, but he's not a man who minces words, tenacity, you know, like not having the tenacity throughout a game. And so that's one of the things that they jumped on. Was it they jumped on Urias and then didn't for the rest of the game?
Right. If there's one good thing to take, I think just kind of looking at their stats the last couple of weeks, it seems like Tatis is who we thought he would be. Tatis seems to be playing. I mean, first pitch home run yesterday, won them a game with his antics on the bases earlier in the week. Where do you see him trending here?
Yeah, well, don't throw him a fastball down the middle on the first pitch of the game.
Generally, that's a good strategy. Yeah, don't do it.
I think Ober just sort of, I'll get this one. Oh, no, you won't. Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty typical Fernando. He'll go a couple games where he's not so much staying in the strike zone and really trying to make something happen. And then, boom, you know, he's got a 3-for-4 and then a game with 2-for-5 with a home run. And that's Fernando Tatis Jr. I don't think he's yet to really get comfortable or stay hot. Manny, I honestly don't know what the numbers are most recently, but he is swinging the bat so much better and laying off pitches that he wasn't earlier, not missing pitches he was earlier. I think he's very, very close. If he's not already there and the results just don't necessarily show it. Juan Soto has like a 561 on base percentage over like the past 10 or 12 games. It's something like 18 hits and 14 walks and like 57 plate appearances. It's like 8 doubles, 2 homers. Bogarts is the one who ever since the end of his on base streak, the unfortunate end of his on base streak, he's like 3-for-22 in the past 6 games. And it's like, he's just rolling over on balls and it's very un Xander Bogarts like. I think that it's 19-19 and they are so much worse than we think they should be. And they think they should be, but it's 19-19. And, right. It's not like they're the 8th or 9th team in the National League. They're tied as the final wild card spot. I think it's with the Marlins of all teams. There's just a long, long way to go. And I thought that I've been waiting for it for a couple of days. There was one time earlier I thought it might come. I think it was about perfect. I do. I know a lot of people were asking for it a month ago. I don't know that it really works a month ago, guys.
Without looking at your notes, and I had the benefit of our producer, John Kelly, running these stats across the bottom third here, of the Padres' big four, who has the highest OPS? Because I think that it would surprise many of our listeners.
Who have the highest OPS? It's definitely Juan Soto.
It's Juan Soto. That, to me, that's shocking. For all the talk that we've had, he has an 888 OPS. You know, his average is up to 250. Slug's
look
not
at good. His on base. I mean,
Yeah,
but that might be his career average about right there. It was before these last couple of years. You understand that? Like a 400 plus on base percentage for the first 4 years of his career is like I understand he's come here and been a major disappointment, but like that suddenly erased what he did the first 4 years is mm-hmm. in the minds of a lot of people. And yeah, like, it can be ridiculous to anoint a guy as a future Hall of Famer after 4 years, right? Like there's some really good players. When you look at these lists, like who does Fernando Tatis measure up against after 170 games? Yes, Ty Cobb's up there and Ted Williams and Mel Ott and all that. But then there's a bunch of guys you've never heard of too. Okay. Right. So it can be ridiculous, but Juan Soto's an amazing player. I don't know. He may have cost himself $100 million. Don't know.
Right.
We got some time to find out.
But he's still getting on base 40% of the time. Yeah, he's on base.
Amazing player.
Yeah, that's incredible. Kevin, you've got to get to the ballpark. Big series this weekend. Any predictions or parting shots here before we get going?
No, I'm fascinated to find out what happens. I really am. These are great pitching matchups. This is always a I hate this place, Los Angeles, but funny because I loved it when I lived here. Oh, I just hate it. And Dodger Stadium's just the worst. You know, the players, what's on their mind too is Friday night's fireworks night. So you got to hustle and get on that bus or you're not getting out. So the zoo. Sorry. It's just my thoughts going to Dodger Stadium. If you're a Padre fan and you come to Dodger Stadium, I think you're a special kind of hero.
I know the answer to this question, I'm going to ask it anyway. Dodger dog, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Ugh.
I knew it. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.